to Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan, JD Blake and Ailish on this beautiful Monday morning. Coming off Easter weekend where got a lot of mini eggs in me, maybe enough that I wouldn't be producing much on this hypothetical fourth line. Let's ask my maybe line mate and our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit donvalleynorthlexus.com. Justin Bourne, co-host of Real Kipper and Bourne, possibly our fourth line grind teammate. What'd you think of Kevin's hypothetical Sportsnet team that he put us on?
Yeah, well, you know, honored to be included. Understand why they'd put us on the fourth line. I will say, if anyone had ever seen me play hockey at Sportsnet, that is the last place I am useful. Yeah. I got to tell you, not a physical force, not a mucker, no use to anyone in that
spot. Same. What's going on here? I'm an energy person. That's maybe a fourth line position.
Not even that for me.
I would love to see it just from the standpoint of how upset Kiprios would be watching Bourne try to muck and grind. Like, having, like, the takes that would be flying on Real Kipper and Bourne of Kipper going, I wish I was on Team TSN so I could run through Justin Bourne.
We'd be the best line to be mic'd up, though, for sure.
Oh, we would. But, you know, there are times where Kipper says, like, oh, I would have loved to play against that guy when he's trying to insult someone in the NHL. And I'm like, oh, that guy plays exactly like me.
I know. That's what I'm trying to think about.
You know what I like to have played against Kipper? That type of guy. Put me out against the checking line. I'll score.
Yeah. Okay. No, I know. I'm like Jimmy VC, but worse. That's my game.
Jimmy VC's already Jimmy VC, but worse. You can't be him too.
I'll tell you right now that this is why you have to really question guys who are good in the league to be general managers or coaches. And this is exactly what I'm talking about. When you look at the way Bieksa broke this team down, horrific job. It is a terrible job. It's honestly it's the worst job a general manager has done since, I don't know, Milbury. Like, this is a Milbury type of job here by Bieksa. No understanding of the personnel, no understanding of the people in the room. This is the job of a guy on Zoom, you know, who's on the Zoom and he's casually watching. He's like, whatever, you just kind of threw the team together. Awful, awful, awful job by him. He's completely set up the team to fail. Yes, Ailish.
Sounds like you're jealous you didn't get the call.
Well, no, I'm actually just like trying to get the GM position is what I'm trying to say here. I just think that it should be questioned, you know, who is putting these teams together, especially considering, like, Ailish, you know, you were just in the NHL.
I was in the NHL, actually.
I mean, you dangled Connor McDavid,
that should come into account.
That should come into account. Did anybody else dangle Connor McDavid? Like, what's the conditioning camp going to look like for this group? Ooh. And you don't think that Ailish Forfar is going to dominate it? Give me a break.
All this criticism for Bieksa, but did you see the third line he assembled? Jamal Mayers, Louis DeBrusque, and who was the other addition?
PJ Stock.
Good Lord. Yeah.
No, honestly, that'd be the least fun thing to be playing in a charity hockey game like those guys. It's like, remember when they did the alumni game between the Red Wings and the Avalanche, but it ended up getting, like, weirdly chippy for a second?
Yeah.
And you went, like, whoa.
Yeah.
And it's like, you were like, guys, like, your careers are settled. Go out there and not
do this. Can Elliot skate?
That was a fair observation. I saw that
He's
name there.
He's a
third-line
D pairing, and I was like, I'd love to see Elliot out there.
Okay. Does he do hockey? I have no idea. I don't know.
Let's call him up next time we'll ask.
I think there was also a moment between Gary Roberts and somebody in one of those outdoor games, and it's just like, it's like, this is why I don't know if you're allowed to put guys like that on a third line in games like this, because it just becomes a problem very, very quickly.
It's a fair point. Like, my dad played for 14 years, and then he played these Legends of Hockey games where you would, like, go around Canada and play, like, the firemen in, Dawson Creek, and then the police and, you know, whatever. So they go on these tours, and at one point, my dad got in a fight in the handshake line after one of these charity events. Like, some guy had been spearing him over and over throughout the game, and they chirped at each other. And I was like, it's hockey. It's tough not to get the competitive juices going.
Yeah, okay. So the reason why I took a shot at BXA was, well, one, it's fun to do it. But two is that it leads me to a take that I wanted to give you off the top today, which is, so I'm at the game last night, and the blue line looks good. And the blue line has looked good in the absence of Jake Muzzin. And I got to tell you, like, okay, Justin Hall has become the whipping boy of this franchise. Like, the Leafs fans need a whipping boy. Like, it's just impossible for them. It's, like, impossible to not just hate one of the players. I, like, we're walking into the stadium, my brother and I, and there's these group of guys going, like, doing a bench Hall chant. And I'm like, we're not even in the building yet. and guys are, like, already heckling Justin Hall. I'm like, amazing. This team's literally on the precipice of winning its, or getting its most points in franchise history. And these guys walking to the game are laser focused on their Justin Hall chirps. So Hall aside, who has not played terrific, right? The blue line looks good in the absence of Muzzin. And I'm sitting there last night, and all I can think about to a degree when it comes to the roster construction, we have, you know, thoughts on players and Matthews and some other stuff coming, but it's just how it's like, why did they get so horned up for bringing Jake Muzzin back early? Like, why did they have this whole thing of, like, we can't put him on LTIR, we got to get him right, we got to get him ready? It's kind of the one real mistake of the trade deadline. Like, the Geo trade looks phenomenal. It's a great, great deal for this team, and you see how much Sheldon Keefe loves him. But looking back, and I know this is hindsight, but it's tough to understand why this organization prioritized so highly trying to get Jake Muzzin back when he was already a shadow of himself, and he hasn't looked healthy when he's played, and you don't miss him when he's gone.
You know, I think it's trying to strike that balance of, like, you know, he has looked at times slow, and if he doesn't get to game speed before the playoffs, you're worried you're going to be just, like, throwing him in the middle of the highway, standing still, and telling him to, like, try to keep up. Like, I get the idea that you wanted to make sure that you didn't put him in a position to fail when he came back against Tampa Bay in round one. But, boy, looking at him since he's been back, I know it's just one play, the John Carlson goal where he gets beat wide and Carlson takes it across the net, but it's tough to watch. It's like watching an old dog try to climb stairs. You're like, can I help here? Like, it's just, there was like a hitch in his step or something. It was just uncomfortable to watch, honestly.
It is. There's been too many times, like, Ailish, what was that? You said, oh, even the people on the broadcast
were like, he got a rut. And you're like, there's no rut. The ice was perfectly flatted. It was as crisp as can be. And they just
they tried to help him out.
A lot of ruts for old Muzz these days. Anyway, I think that, yeah, your team is better off with him available, obviously. And yes, I'm not writing off Muzzin's year, but and I understand the point you're making, and I understand the thought process behind what Dubas did, but this is one of those you have to understand what you have scenarios, and you have to kind of think through that. And I don't know. It just, maybe there wasn't a name out there. Maybe there wasn't someone that they could have brought in from a cap standpoint or an asset standpoint anyways. Prices were extremely high this year, but boy, you would have liked to use that cap space to your benefit if you could have, and there was someone out there. And I am kind of curious what it would have looked like had they not committed to bringing Muzzin back, the deadline, and how this is going to be perceived if they do get bounced by Tampa Bay in the first round. Okay, so Matthews doesn't play last night. Mm-hmm. The question we were asking earlier is, there's six games remaining. Where is your level of concern that he doesn't hit 60?
Yeah, you know, I would say it's gone from, like, almost none to a very little, but, like, it's there.
I have it at 5 to 8%.
Yeah, like, it's there. It's present. You know, I guess, is he going to come back and play in the next games? It seems quite likely. You know, but they are going, you know, after Tuesday, they go on the road to play some really hard games. They're in Tampa, in Florida, in Washington after this Tuesday game. So it's not like there's a bunch of, like, pushovers for him to light up. You know, I obviously think pretty confident he's going to get there. But I don't know. I imagine if you're the team, you'd like for that to not be the focus. Like, wouldn't you love for him to go out on Tuesday and just shoot two in the net or something? So you can be like, yeah, I don't know, rest him or play him 15 minutes a game or whatever the plan would be after that.
Well, this is my only thing on it. And Ailish, I kind of want you to weigh in on this too, is like, don't you kind of feel like you're, you know, we talked about this earlier where you're supposed to be sharpening up the team, right, down the stretch here, and he comes back. And there's got to be at least a little emphasis on these guys to try to get him to that number. Like, I would think at least a little. And what happens if you get to the Boston game at the end of the season and you go, well, we'd like to rest him here, but he's sitting on 59. Like, there's a couple things on it. There's a couple things on it that I don't think it's that hot takey to think about.
No. And that would be a really interesting scenario, JD. Like, if, let's say they're like, okay, well, the game is 4-0. We'd like to give him some rest before the postseason. He's on 59. I think, one, you go to the player and you say, what do you want to do? Mm-hmm. You know, we think this is the best thing for you is to not play. And if he thinks, you know, I really want to go, I think you got to keep him happy. By the same token, you know, are you even sure that resting him would be what you would want to do, given the best chance to succeed in the playoffs? Probably. I don't know. You have some real decisions to make. First off, what you want to do, what keeps the player happy, how important is it to him? You kind of got to weigh those things, because you're right. I can see a scenario we're headed towards here where it's a tough decision.
Well, they play the Flyers and the Red Wings in these final six games.
Oh,
so
please,
if he can't score one goal in each of those games, and even if he doesn't get any against the Lightning, the Panthers, the Capitals, and the Bruins, I think that he can probably get at least two goals. I'm less concerned about
it. The Flyers played someone named
Felix
Sandstrom in net last night. So, let's get
like
that.
Like, our fourth line would be scoring. Me, Kipper, and Bourne. We'd be scoring.
Yeah, we'd chip in a couple.
Yeah.
So, with Matthews being out last night, they did a little bit of a blender with the lines. And there was some success and some interesting decisions. What did you like about seeing a couple of new promotions and demotions?
Favorite part for me was just getting Blackwell to play with someone who isn't a fourth liner, and not like it was All-Stars
yes,
he was
Team
with.
Team Blackwell.
Yeah, you know, I got a little bit of run with Mikhail Bunting there. Pretty
this
good hockey
not
player.
The take.
No, but I just want. I wanted to see him, you know, when they first got him, they were like, all right, we'll see if he can get some run up the lineup. He hasn't really got that opportunity, so I was happy he got to play a few more minutes. I was surprised, I guess, that Bunting didn't get to stick around with old Mitchie boy, so interesting that they're allowed to use Bunting in a role that isn't on the top line. It's good for them to remember that. And yeah, Tavares always plays well with Marner, so keep Tavares happy too and going. I like that.
Is the perfect fit for Nylander that he's just a man without country and he's just a rover that plays like, you know, he's just a mercenary for a line that needs a boost or a situation?
It's not a bad one. You know, I can't really think of anyone he's played with where you're like, the two of them, they get out there and it's tic-tac-toe and they see each
Engvall
other all over the
kind
rink.
Of, no? Like, yesterday I really liked him and Engvall's chemistry.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like both the players.
Yeah.
I don't know that there were too many moments where I felt like it was the two of them doing, you know, Sedin stuff or anything, but
no, it wasn't that.
I really do love how Engvall and Mikheyev have suddenly become needle movers for this team. It's like when those guys are on the ice, you feel pretty good about the direction the play is going to go.
Yeah, I got to tell you that last night, again, watching Engvall in person, first of all, his stride is hilarious, but it's awesome. And it's just he's kind of fun to watch. And now he doesn't do the thing where he takes the puck and goes backwards the whole time, like the whole game, where he's like, you know, I'm going to go. He figured out that going towards the other team's net is good. I have a, you know, we were very early Pierre Engvall as a guy labelers, right? We might have jumped out too soon, and then we were living to regret it a little bit. And then we kind of walked off it. And I wish we had just held on to our stock, because I really like the guy. And every time I watch him, I go, what is he worth? Like, what do you pay a guy like this who, you know, at times is not really noticeable and that other times looks great and doesn't bring any of that physical edge, but sure looks good in at least a regular season game? Like, I don't know, I'm feeling a degree of confidence in him where I'm like, you could push him up the lineup a little bit and give him a look, you could bring him down the lineup and give him a look. I like him pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, it's just he's one of those guys I feel like if he went 20 games without scoring a goal, you wouldn't flinch, right? Like, you'd just be like, yeah, it makes sense. Like, he's one of those guys,
but he shoots a lot.
He does, but see, yeah, and that's the thing, is that like he's going to have stretches where it goes in for him a little bit, and he's fast enough. You know, there's almost an element of like Michael Grabner there, where he's just going to get 20 breakaways, and sometimes it's going to go in, and sometimes it's not. But yeah, the point from before was like, when he wasn't scoring before, he wasn't effective. he wasn't physically involved in the play. The play wasn't going the right way because he was turning it back. At least now you feel good about the direction of the play. You know, he seems more confident when he has the puck. There's a lot to like there. So someone in playoffs, I think, that will be a force to handle for defenses because you're constantly worried about having to turn around. Like, am I pivoting to chase this guy? Is he going to blow by me? I think he helps set bad gaps, and I like that.
Okay, so six games left, as we said. What do you care about most in the next little while? Is it about Jack being consistent? Is it getting Matthews to 60? Is it seeing what these guys that were not really supposed to be needle drivers start to do? If you have to pick a couple things that you want to hone in on, what would be the biggest area of focus?
Thoughts all Jack. It's Jack, Jack, mm-hmm. Jack. Like, what?
He looked good last night.
Did yeah Ish. He did
he got screened, you know, by his own player once, and then one person scored on his own net.
Yeah,
Stewie's favorite player scoring a goal on him. It was awesome. Yeah, it was like bang. So it was right in front of the net. What hands?
You know, like, Lavushkin's screen on him was unbelievable last night.
It was like the
textbook.
Perfect screen. Like, yeah.
It was
money.
But you know, like, Campbell didn't, he wasn't awesome at, like, seeing around his own player or anything, but the one that Kerfoot shot in his net, I really could have used a little bit more, I don't know, oomph out of him there. I don't know what it was, but I thought that after that, I had a moment where I was like, oh God, is he just going to be the guy who hands hockey games away? And he wasn't. You know, he held on to a lot of shots from the point after that. Mm-hmm. He made a big save to start the third period where the Islanders could have got some momentum going. I felt positive that Jack held them in there and didn't give it away. I felt like he could actually sit in the stall after the game and be like, I was one of the reasons we won that game, and that's the start of building confidence, and everything with Campbell is about confidence and that precious brain of his, so get it moving in that direction.
Yeah, I actually really liked his game last night, and especially to close it out. And there were real moments where the Islanders started to put the pressure on, and there was a lot of activity around the net, and I just thought that Jack looked good. He looked healthy, he looked quick, and yeah, he made the saves he needed to make, and you're right. I like the idea of him sitting at the stall happy with a smile, and the teammates kind of being one where they go, hey, thanks, Jack, you really helped us out there. You held him to two mm-hmm. goals, and we needed you to do that. Is there a player that you go more up and down on right now than Lyubushkin? Because you mentioned him there, and yeah. I was going to let you go, but it's like, I have these moments where I go, this guy's critical for the playoffs, and then I have moments where I go, oh my God, this is a nightmare. Like, I yeah. can't believe he's playing. I can't remember the experience quite like this, where it's just like one extreme to the next in the way I feel about the guy.
Yeah, he's clearly, his commitment to the game is on the defensive and the physical side of things, and he does those things well, and he's committed to them. That's one thing I like about his game, is that it's like, okay, he knows what his role is out there. That's awesome. There are times, though, where he's just standing in the wrong place, or, you know, I've said it before, he kind of gets caught flat-footed at times, not making perfect reads, which, it's a hard league, and I get that. He, to me, is a great third pair guy. You know, the unfortunate part right now is the way the pairs look. You know, with him playing with Riley, he's going to play more minutes than you want, and there's going to be times when the best teams in the NHL, which is all that's left when you get to the playoffs, have moments with him. So, yeah, I still really like him. I think he's a huge upside. I think he gets better quickly, and he wants to learn, and he's coachable, and he has the tools. I got nothing but good things to say about the player. But there's no doubt there is moments where you go, okay, you know, this guy gives up a few more high danger chances than you'd like out of any defenseman.
Borny.
All right.
Great analysis,
I was say,
as always.
I'm booking ice time for us right now to get on there and get some training in, okay, the three of us?
You guys got to send BX a tape, you know? Like, you guys got to send BX a...
like a Rocky montage of Ailish and I training?
That's right.
We need that BioSteel summer camp to come real quick and get us running around out there.
God, my cardio's a joke.
I just don't think player GM is the way you want to be. Like, I don't want Morgan Riley be a stepping into the, like, eat the 20 plus minutes a night and then also have to be the GM. See you later, Bourne. Thanks, bud.
Thanks for having me. See you.
That Justin Insider Bourne. Was brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit donvalleynorthlexus.com.
Yeah, we were supposed to do that earlier, and I blew it.
I did
usual. Oh, no, I mean me with Stephen A. at 8. Or were we not?
Oh.
No, we had it penciled in for 9. Don't worry about it. Okay. We got your back.
All right. Oh, I didn't make
a
mistake.
Great job.
Oh, no. See, well, you guys say I don't apologize. Now I'm out here apologizing for things unnecessary.
There you go, JD.
Yeah, thank you, thank you. So, how many more games are there even left to go
six.
To? There's six games, but how many
oh,
are at
but
home?
There's
three home
I
games.
I believe three.
Okay, yeah. So.
But we know, could be know. Sending you to one
mm-hmm.
if you'd like.
Mm-hmm.
The final game of the season, Leafs fans, to the arch rival Boston Bruins for giving
the
away a pair
game.
Of tickets.
The don't
the
get hurt game.
Game.
The yes. You just go watch Ooh. And say, you go,
Bubble
healthy, healthy. Like, that's it. That's all you chant.
Yeah. Well, that's your job if we give you a pair of tickets to the April 29th home game against the Boston Bruins. All you need to do is download today and Tuesday's episodes of the Fan Morning Show and listen for the special code word that is placed in each podcast. Then you text each code word to 590-590 for your chance to win. Each code word counts as one entry. The winner will be selected this Wednesday. So that's for the Toronto Maple Leafs, Boston Bruins, final home game of the season, April 29th, the Protect Your Players bubble wrap game. Should still be fun, though. You still want to go. Good luck. Look for the code word and text it in 590-590.
Can we get tickets as well to whatever that game is that you and Bourne and Kipper are playing on a line?
Oh my! I think it'd be actually really great for charity. People would tune in, and then both stations can fight for broadcast rights, and it'd be really fun.
For broadcast rights. No, yeah. I don't think that people would be tuning in on television.
They
I don't
sure think would.
Yeah.
It would
no, you're right. The NBA. No,
Ailish.
Ailish, the NBA playoffs, the NHL
Stanley
Cup playoffs.
Like, after
this
everything's
summer.
Settled, there's that lull. I think then we should do this charity game.
No,
gives
Ailish.
Me time to train.
Also, nothing better than you being new to media right now, going like, in the summertime.
Everyone's around,
we'll
right?
Kevin Bieksa, and we'll get all these hockey
Elliot
guys.
Friedman's around,
yeah.
right? He's not on vacation.
No, yeah. All right. It'll be fine. You'll be able to round up everyone in a lickety-split. There'll be no issue
They're
whatsoever.
They're already training. Nobody's drinking little Buddhas. Yeah. It's good. Full
I was
form.
Say,
yep.
It's going to be a 3-on-3 tournament. It's just going to
oh,
be like,
God.
That's it. That's
Ooh,
it at
that's
most. Okay, yeah. let's take Ooh, a break. Okay. Yeah, Scotty Barnes is out. It's tough. Really, really tough. I'm really hoping. I'm being so optimistic, trying to believe that it's just
his
something.
His ankle
where,
literally bent into
I know,
an angle
and just
it should never have been in.
Yeah, and just the way he looked. I honestly, I felt sick. I just sat there and felt sick for about 5 to 10 minutes before.
And the worst
I could even
is when they
read.
Keep replaying it and zooming in and showing
it. I don't mind
it.
That.
Like,
I don't.
No,
I actually
no,
don't mind
no,
that.
No.
If it's a leg break where it's a gruesome thing
okay,
and they show
yeah,
it,
no thanks.
But. I get, you know what, now I'm going against you again. I,
all right,
when they
fine.
Show an injury, I want to see kind of what happened to the guy.
I
and
already
it's
saw
the,
it one, 200 times.
I know, but I don't mind. I feel like when people criticize it where they go, it's grotesque or whatever. It's like it's a sports broadcast and injuries happen in sports all the time. Seeing how a play developed and seeing how the injury occurred were big. I did think that it was a really, really bad look. For fans that were accusing Joel Embiid of being dirty on that play, though, like I really did think that that was a bad.
Yeah,
one.
He
like,
intentionally at full speed with the ball, yeah. engaged in something that put him at just as much risk of injury
yeah.
as Scotty Barnes.
No.
Like, what are we?
Yeah.
What are we doing here? Embiid can be accused of playing recklessly sometimes, especially with
yeah.
the elbows and the
but
way
that was
he
outrageous.
His backside around. But yeah. you step on someone else's foot,
no.
you are putting. Like, Embiid is not a guy who has been without no. injury risk in the past.
No.
You're not going out there stepping on someone's foot intentionally, and then yeah. your giant ankle rolls over on itself. Like, no, that's silly.
Basically, that was me being a preemptive, don't text that in the text line tomorrow. You know, like, I don't want to have to do that. That's the end of that.
I
like,
won't
I
read
do not,
those.
I do not think what he did was dirty. Our boy Herb on the other end, I think he meant to try to do a little body check on DeAndre Ayton last night, a little late. That was a little bit of a dirty play for our guy Herb. Just say it. Just say it. Let's take a break. Let's come back. And let's ask Coach Thorpe what he thinks the Raptors need to do in order to make some adjustments tonight to find success both on the defensive and offensive ends. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar, JD Bunkus. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The code word for today's episode to text 590-590 to qualify for your shot to win Leafs Bruins tickets on April 29th is DeBrusque.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan, Blake Murphy, J.D. Bunkus, Ailish Forfar. Give them a follow at their names on social media. Subscribe to this podcast, The Fan Morning Show, wherever you get it. It's been a little bit of a dour day in terms of Toronto Raptors talk because... Game one did not go well. Scotty Barnes is doubtful for tonight for game two. The next guest that we're going to bring on, though, we're going to talk some negativity because Scotty Barnes is hurt. But before Scotty Barnes rolled his ankle and had it stepped on, there was a ton of positive to take from his performance. And there's nobody better to talk about the positives of Scotty Barnes than longtime basketball coach, current writer and analyst for True Hoop, author of Basketball is Jazz, unofficial member of Raptors Twitter, David Thorpe. Coach, how are you this morning?
I'm doing better than the Raptor fans, probably. Understandably so.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Before we get into the downside of that game, though, I'd like to hear your thoughts on Scotty Barnes' performance prior to the injury, because I know he was your Rookie of the Year. I know he's your guy coming into the season, and nothing's changed on that front. I imagine you were pretty excited watching him push a triple-double in his first career playoff game.
I mean, really, I was just excited because it's good for the league. This guy's going to be a superstar. He might do it a little differently than what some of the other, you know, best players in the game do. He's really kind of a throwback to some degree. If he can develop a better shot, then he'll be a little more, you know, like the modern star we have. But his ability to impact the game all over the place, the joy at which he competes with while still being very physical. I mean, Scotty plays like a, you know, 25-year-old veteran now. It's so impressive. And you joke about being the unofficial, you know, Toronto Raptor Twitter guy, but people just love to take shots at me. I understood it when I thought he was higher, a better prospect than Suggs and everyone really, but Mobley coming into the season. Fine, you can challenge me if you want to, but I mean, now, like, I don't know what they're talking about. What else can this guy do, and other than roll his ankle? It looked like he was going to be the second youngest player in NBA history to get a triple-double in a playoff game. It was going to be his first ever game on the road against a terrific team. So it's I don't think NBA did anything wrong, by the way. I'm happy to say I thought it was just bad luck. That kind of stuff happens. He did play a ton of minutes this year. The more minutes you play, there is an increased chance for injury. Of course, I understand the alternative, which is you may not win if you don't play him. So I'm not blaming anyone, but I'm not blaming Embiid either. It's just bad luck, and let's just hope Scotty can get back in the series before it's over.
I love the pushback you get, and you know, I know that you're having fun with it, but there is a little bit of check the resume, and you can be like, well, you guys said the same thing when I was very high on Giannis and people didn't believe me. So right. Certainly not putting a Giannis scale on Scotty Barnes, but you do have the track record to back up this optimism. Now, looking longer term at Scotty Barnes, so the team's only said that X-rays were negative. After an MRI, they're still only calling it a left ankle sprain. Obviously, there's a lot of different grades and severities that something like that can be. He's doubtful for tonight, game two. Let's assume the worst, and this is it for him for this series. You tweeted some concern about how an injury like this isn't just about right now. It's about longer-term development as well and what his first pro offseason might look like. Can you explain what your concern would be there in a little more detail?
Yeah, well, I don't have that concern if it's just an ankle sprain. My concern was that he tore some ligaments, and that would set back his offseason a good amount. He really hasn't had, not just Scotty, his class has had just a crazy run of things. So I was hoping for all of them this summer would be just a regular summer league. I don't know that I wouldn't play him in summer league personally, but he'd be working with the team, I'm sure. And so it looks like that's if he's doubtful tonight, and I don't expect him to play, I don't know that we'll see him all series, but he should have a regular offseason because the jump he can make now that he's got a full year under his belt, and I mean, he's one of the top guys in the league at minutes played, and a better understanding, not just of the league, but where he fits next to Siakam and Fred, that matters. They could have three All-Stars next year. That makes a difference. Siakam's their best player. Scotty one day will be their best player, but There's no reason why you get to rush that. He can be number two for quite a while, with Freddie being such a key player on both ends as well. All three of those guys are two-way players. They have a huge future, but he should learn so much from the mistakes he made this season, or just when he didn't have great success, how to get better. He's got to get a better ball handling, got to get better shooting. He's probably got to learn a more defined role defensively. He tends to play a lot of center field, which works for them, but he needs to be better than that. If you're going to win a championship, he's got to be more of a lockdown guy, which I think he can be. So the fact that he's likely to be able to move around fine, you know, by May 1st or whatever, if you guys are done, he should have a really good offseason, and you guys are going to be terrific next year.
So let's say Scotty is unfortunately out for the rest of this series. What do the Raptors need to adjust around him not being the lineup? You know, you mentioned how much he can do on all sides of the ball, even his leadership coming into last game, where it seemed like he was driving the Raptors in that game. What can they do if the unfortunate circumstance is that he's not playing?
Yeah, I thought that was maybe the biggest surprise of the weekend for any series, really, was Toronto's lack of fight. Outside of their rookie. And not to say there weren't moments of it, of course, but I didn't get the feeling that they were playing with an edge, as in we have to win this game. I think it's noticeable when the team is playing almost recklessly. They're so desperate to win. I thought we saw that in a lot of the Brooklyn-Boston game. And Minnesota, I thought, brought it. Memphis didn't. And I thought Philly was desperate to win. The evidence is there. The way they defended the glass, Toronto got beat on the boards, which I never would have expected. It's clear Philadelphia made it a priority. And not having Scottie is not going to help, just because he's a big body and his athleticism and energy. You have to account for him, which means maybe someone else will be open. But the Raptors have to ratchet up their intensity. This is, you know, I don't think NBA fans necessarily always appreciate that, but these are human beings. And even in high school, you can see more of a disparity. In college, you can see more of a disparity. It's still, I've been watching the NBA for a long time now as an analyst, and it's just evident that there are times that a team just doesn't yet have that required amount of dynamic effort. And you can't beat, so your team can't beat Philadelphia with or without Scotty, without that. There's some other adjustments they can make as well, but that starts with, they can't outplay us athletically and energy-wise. So I hope we see, and Scotty makes a big difference there. So, and Thaddeus, you know, being out and Gary Trent being out, I mean, I'm really worried that they're going to be down early. And then if that happens, I really think Cook Nurse should just bench everyone and save them for game three, because to wear them out in a game they can't win sets you up for a game three loss, and then you're done.
Yeah, I actually, it's really interesting that you put it that way. What I described it as earlier in the show was there was a passiveness that was odd to see at times from some of the players in that game, and Scotty obviously not being one of them. But when you look at this team gave up 133 points, I want to say, in that game, and that was the strangest thing for us to see, right, is this is a team that's really, you know, got entrenched in their defensive identity. Do you view that as a they need to change a game plan issue, or how much of that just comes to the intensity that you were just discussing?
Oh, I think it's two things. Just from watching the game live, and a little bit on tape in the last day and a half, the intensity is an issue, but also they didn't seem to prioritize preventing Tyrese from getting to the rim. They seem more concerned with his outside shooting on occasion. I understand it. He shot, I think, 42% from three this year. But they've got to not give him layups. That's without question. And so you can reorient your defensive rotations towards making sure you're always seeing him in the basket to begin with, as opposed to denying him from perimeter, and then he could use his speed to blow by you when he gets it. That's a mistake. I know Scotty actually made one of those mistakes. I think it was just by design. They kind of switched that pick and pop, and Scotty was just up the floor trying to get in the passing lane, but he didn't get to the ball, and Tyrese just beat him with speed to the rim. And so they can make that adjustment as a team and just always be in front of him, make him shoot over us. They do have, you know, size and length as an advantage over everyone but Fred. That's the other thing is Fred did not look right to me. He got better, I thought, as the game went on, but I know he's been hurt for a while. I've written about it. And if he can't guard Tyrese Maxey, there's no series. It's over very quickly. He is an elite defensive player. And everyone's always quicker than him. It doesn't matter. He figures it out. That's his genius. That's his talent. And he did not have an answer for Tyrese. No one on your team did. And so, consequently, you don't have to have a great game from Joel Embiid and a decent one from James Harden when Maxey. And the other thing was Tobias Harris, that played really well. I don't know that he always will. But let's face it, if the Sixers get great play from Maxey and Tobias, they don't need their superstars to be great, and they'll probably have enough because those guys, even in average games, are still very good. So Toronto's got to outplay those other guys. And if Joel ends up scoring 30, make him do it on 25 shots and limit the other guys. Easier said than done, but I think that's what their plan has to be.
Yeah, easier said than done, but this is a team that's had some success doing that before and at least making Embiid's life very difficult as he stacks those points up. One of the things that I found disconcerting about the Raptors' play in that game was not only just the defense in general, but I thought that as the whistle didn't go their way, they wore that a little bit, and they lost a little bit of their composure. We heard Nick Nurse and Fred VanVleet both comment on it after the game in ways that probably saved their $25,000, but made it clear that they didn't think that whistle was an accurate reflection of the game. As a coach, how do you keep your team from getting frustrated about that in the moment? Because you do have to, if you're the Raptors, you have to stick to your defensive principles, and you have to, matchup wise, you kind of have to keep with this approach of, well, they can't call everything and you have to be physical. I feel like the Raptors lost that a little bit. I'm curious how you'd try to keep them on that mentality.
Well, I mean, you're dealing with grown men, and so you have to trust that they know what they're doing, but I know the message needs to be, fellas, we are up against it. Like, let's not lie here. We're missing two starters, two very good starters, and three of our top whatever, six or seven, whatever you want to call it, Thaddeus, off the bench. I guess the team that's got a lot of weapons. We just can't afford distractions. And so, Coach Nurse can say, let me work the referees. It doesn't mean you can't let these grown men, stick up themselves, but the moment you see them losing that focus because they're thinking about other things, you've got to nip it in the bud because, again, Toronto could easily get blown out again without those guys being out. Let's put it this way. If Philly plays well, they will blow them out. Toronto's going to try to keep them from playing well for sure, but there's no guarantee they'll be able to. And Philadelphia's got enough talent where no matter Toronto can play good defense, they've got enough shot makers to still make it ugly. And I think if Fred was healthy, I'd feel very differently. But I just don't think that he is. And so that you basically have a one man team right now in Siakam. The other guys are fine, but they're not difference makers the way Pascal is. And Philadelphia knows that. And this isn't game three where Thibault's going to be at home. No, he's playing. So they have that blanket to throw on Siakam if they need to. He's an incredible, one of the best, so probably two wing defenders in the league. So that's a factor as well. That's what you're hoping for, actually, is Philly being overconfident because they know this is going to be a hard game for them to win. And that can be a problem. If you lose your edge and you're Philadelphia, that's where the Toronto's got to take advantage of it by showing up early and just staying with it. It's a long game. It's not about the first quarter. They can get blown out in the first quarter and they're in trouble. But if they start out well and stay with it, you put some pressure on Philly. And that's what didn't happen in game one at all. Philly had almost no pressure possessions the entire second half. And you need to do that. You need to put them in pressure. You need to put James Harden in a little duress and then see how he does. And that didn't happen in game one.
So, Coach, what do you want to see from Siakam tonight?
Oh, boy. I mean, really, the recipe, there's a couple of things. First of all, really assertive, of course. Always looking to be weaponized as their best offensive weapon. But you got to get off the ball when Philly's calling you. You're not going to beat Philadelphia if they're going to send two to you and you still think you can score. So be opportunistic when it's one-on-one. Be assertive when you think you have the matchup that you want, attacking from the perimeter if Embiid's on you, bully ball against smaller guys, get out and transition more. I don't think Toronto did a great job. They were okay in fast break, not great, and they need to be great, and didn't do anything in the glass. And then when you're effective and Philadelphia starts sending more help, you got to get off the ball quickly, unlike what Kyrie did in the last possession last night, which, Kyrie is great, but you probably need to pass the ball. And so if you can get two on you and kick it to someone else or hit someone cutting. And that's the other thing, too, is he's got to be more of a cutter as well. The problem is it's easier to guard him off the ball when there's no threat to really be a scorer on the ball. And that's where Scotty, I think, can break it down, and so can Gary some. So it's going to be a challenge for Toronto that way. But Siakam, the other thing is just a relentless heartbeat. As long as in the game, you bring that energy, bring that motor as a leader to let the guys know that even if we go down 2-0, we have every reason to think we can win games 3 and 4 because their best defenders won't be there. And even though they didn't score a lot, but Matisse is an important player for them. And so you don't want to be disheartened too much just because you dropped the first two. Like the Bucks did it. The Bucks lost the first two in the finals last year and won a championship. That should give Toronto some encouragement.
Hey, the Raptors lost the first two against Milwaukee on their way to a championship. Should give them encouragement there too. Coach David Thorpe, thank you so much for taking the time this morning. We really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Have a great day.
Coach David Thorpe, longtime coach, current writer and analyst at True Hoop and author of Basketball is Jazz, the leading voice on all things Scotty Barnes. It doesn't look like there's going to be a Scotty Barnes today. He's still listed as doubtful as of right now. The Raptors will have shoot around in a little bit, and maybe we'll get an update there. Maybe it's a game time thing, but the talk around it hasn't been very optimistic. And whether Scotty Barnes played or not, but especially with Scotty Barnes out, you have to think, JD, that this is a pretty big game in terms of how we'll be talking and thinking about Pascal Siakam entering the offseason or the rest of the playoffs.
It's a massive game for Siakam. And I mean this in the sense of if he can, like, the Raptors don't need to win this game for you to feel better about Pascal. If he can go out there and post a, like, if his total tonight is 25.5, if he can hit that number efficiently and he can start being a fulcrum for playmaking and he can get on the glass and he defends, like, if he rises to the occasion, and we'll all know what that looks like, it's going to vaunt the confidence of this player for this fan base moving forward for the rest of the series and for the rest of his tenure as a Toronto Raptor. I don't care if he struggles from the field necessarily because their defense is going to load up on him. There's Joel Embiid down there. There's Tybal out there. He's gonna have a tough go tonight. Like, this is going to be a game where they load up on him and they say, if we take out Siakam, who else is going to beat us? That's got to be Doc Rivers' entire game plan, right? Like, what is more obvious than that? Okay, if OG Anunoby beats you, OG Anunoby beats you. Fred VanVleet's an all-star, but he's not someone that you're usually asking to carry you offensively to a win, especially when he's not at 100%. And then there is a significant drop-off here. So I'm not saying this is going to be easy for him, but we're going to know what it looks like if he is assertive and forceful and doesn't shy away from the game. What I cannot see, or what I do not want to see happen, is that passiveness in the game. And I'm glad that Coach Thorpe sort of backed it up, because I thought Siakam played a fine game, right? Like, he was fine. He wasn't bad, he was fine. And given his past track record against the Boston Celtics as of the most recent example of playoff performances for him, you'd gladly take fine. Because had they gotten fine from Siakam against the Celtics, they would have gone past the Celtics. But unfortunately, that's not the bar anymore. We're talking about someone that we think is all NBA. We're talking about someone who statistically was in the range down the stretch of some of the game's greatest players. And I don't think that's what Siakam is. And I've always thought it's an unfair bar for him to be expected to be, you know, the Kawhi replacement, which was the way that we framed it when he left. But I do want to see how he rises to this occasion where all the chips are stacked against you and a team is going to load up against you. How do you look? Are you able to maintain with force throughout the game? Because I don't think anyone's going to blame him if he's out there doing his best and they are just dominating. We just saw this with Kevin Durant. The Boston Celtics loaded up against the greatest scorer who ever lived, and he struggled at times. But Kevin Durant never shied away in that game, and Kevin Durant is the one that hit a baseline shot that we thought maybe sealed the basketball game, right? And I want to see that from Pascal. I want to see a wire-to-wire effort for him. And what I think is difficult and what I think is unfortunate is that because it's a team that is built to throw some things at him right now while they have Thybul and they have Embiid taking away the rim, I just hope that it doesn't derail some of the positive momentum that he has had this season, where we end up with a night where, you know, Siakam finishes with, like, the DeRozan line for last night, for example, where I don't know what, I can't remember specifically what it is off the top of my head, but it was, this is the feeling, is when you look at the box score, you go, woof. You know, like, or the Trae Young line where you go, oof. You just don't want to have a line that you look at in the box score.
if Siakam shoots 8% from the floor, I don't really want to do the show tomorrow.
Like, that's what I mean. It's like, just don't have a oof game, but there is a scenario for that given like the parameters of this one. And yeah, I just, if Nick Nurse is benching his core, like David just outlined, the potential for that at the beginning of the fourth quarter, and Siakam shot, you know, like somewhere in that low percentage range, like 25% or worse, it's going to be tough not to see the takes fly.
Yeah, and look, the Raptors fans know that this doesn't necessarily come efficiently, right? You look back to that championship run, Kawhi shot 16 of 39 in Game 7 against the 76ers. Certainly not advocating Siakam to take 39 shots, but sometimes that's what that feels like. He shot 10 of 26 in Game 1 against the Bucks. Sometimes you just have to carry a big offensive load, and you have to carry it kind of with a demeanor of I'm okay missing shots because I know we need me to create right now. And I hope he has some of that. I think, you know, I'm pretty optimistic that he will. I thought his game one, like you said, it was good. 24 shot or 24 points on 20 used possessions, 7-0 assist to turnover ratio. You know, probably other than Scottie Barnes, the only Raptor who was really effective defensively. But we know what a Siakam imprint on the game performance feels like. And it's at both ends, and it's unavoidable. And this is a guy who has another gear. And again, that was a good game one for him. That isn't hung on him in any sort of way. But this is also a guy who, last time they played Philly in the regular season, had 37, 10, and 12. And the time before that had 26, 10, and 5 pretty efficiently. And, you know, that 26, 10, and 5 feels a little better in a narrow win. But you need that 37, 10, 12 version of Siakam. And again, not saying he has to put up those lines exactly. That is just a ridiculously high bar for any player to clear. But you need a Siakam who is having his imprint on all aspects of the game. And sure, maybe that's not fair to hang on him in such a dire situation with guys missing and no spacing and stuff like that.
He's a max player.
And also, like, this is where you're at. Like, if you can do this, then the All-NBA discussion is now a permanent discussion. It's a, are you a top 15 player discussion? If it doesn't go that way, I don't think you're downgrading him out of like the top 30, but I think it's another data point that, you're in that kind of second tier of guy. And one game's not fair, but look, one game means a lot to the Raptors right now. And, you know, somehow, even though, again, he was very, very efficient and very effective in game one, they need more.
Yep, they need more. And this is a perfect tie-in to the storyline that brought us all together, right, when we did our first practice show, which was, what did Fred VanVleet say being the man is? It means missing 1,000 shots and knowing that the next one goes through you, and no one say, well, I think the quote
nobody
was, no
blinks.
One looks the other way. Nobody blinks.
Nobody blinks when you take 40 shots.
And if tonight calls for, if the game is close tonight and the Raptors need buckets, then I don't care. Take 40 shots because you're the guy to take 40 shots. No one else on this team should out field goal attempt Siakam tonight. And I do want to see, if he needs to have that 16 of 41 game or 16 to 39 game, Blake, like that is it. This is sort of the tie-in from the beginning of the season to right now is the becoming the man process. Well, this is one of those moments. Like, this isn't about depth. This isn't about other pieces. This is literally about you. And so, yeah, you're right. It's a tough thing, but that's, you know, heavy is the head that wears the crown. So we're going to end up seeing what happens with Siakam tonight one way or another. I'm excited for it. I'm nervous about it. I kind of feel similarly to the way Stephen A. Smith does about it, where they need this one. But I also could see the scenario David Thorpe just outlined, which is that you start to rest your guys and say, well, we're spinning this narrative into series doesn't start till you lose at home. Raptors, Sixers tonight, game two, massive game. Blue Jays off tonight. We'll have everything for you tomorrow. It's the Fan Morning Show. JD Bunkus, Blake Murphy, Ilish Forfar. Thanks for listening. Subscribe to the podcast and leave 5 stars. We'll see you tomorrow.